Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Lysico, Des Moines Register, along with Kennington Smith of the Des Moines Register. We're posted up in different spots here at the United Center to talk about Iowa's 73-69 loss to the Ohio State Buckeyes. Kennington, I can't say this is the first time I've seen a fifth-seeded Iowa team lose to a 13th seed. Saw it happen back in 2015, actually. The Hawkeyes lost to 13th-seeded Penn State as a 5-seed. Ended up winning one game in the NCAA tournament and then getting bounced by Gonzaga. But anyway, so it's happened before, but it doesn't make it any better. Honestly, and to tell our viewers, Kennington and I were not able to sit next to each other during the game. So this is like the first chance we've really gotten to talk. So let's talk about the game. Like we're on a bar stool. Where was this game settled in your mind?
Yeah, I think for me, this game came down to a theme of Iowa's season that I've spoken to several times throughout our podcast, is that it's going to come down to Iowa's backcourt. You know what you're going to get out of the front court, and Philip Aracha was great today, 20-7, very efficient from the field. When he got the ball, he was decisive, aggressive. Chris Murray,
yeah.
I have to pull up his exact shooting splits, but I thought he played well. He definitely did well distributing the ball in the first half. So you know what you're going to get out of those guys. But it kind of came down to Aaron Ulis and Tony Perkins. And that's the thing about this Ohio State matchup. They might not have a great record in the Big Ten or overall, but they do have really strong guard play. And it's just a bad matchup for Iowa. And I thought that Ohio State's guards outplayed Iowa's guards today. Tony Perkins had a strong second half, but overall I thought that Ohio State's guards won that matchup. Yeah. Ultimately, in a game as close as it was where you're splitting hairs, the advantage that Ohio State had in that aspect lifted them to a win.
The last time Iowa and Ohio State played, Kennington, Connor McCaffrey's line was 7 points, 6 rebounds, 13 assists, no turnovers. His line today in 30 minutes of play, 0 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 2 turnovers. And I think you'd lump him into the backcourt as well, even though he starts at the 3 position. But,
yeah,
you know, he was on the floor a lot in ball handling situations and just tough lines for him and Ulis. Ulis, 1 point, 2 rebounds, no assists. And then even – I'll even take it a step further. You know, Peyton Sanford with the fouls. Which I still don't get. I'm going to have to go on a tangent here. And I did it in my column too. But like, if you're a reserve, you should not be subject to the 2-foul policy or at least start the second half. Cause he had 4 points in just 15 minutes and he never took a 3-pointer. I'm not saying like he was, you know, he was on fire when he was in there or anything like that. But, all that combined, I guess I'm in agreement with everything you're saying.
Yeah. No, think about Peyton. They really didn't need him in that first half. And look at the first numbers. The Iowa shot a good percentage. They shot 50%. The problem was, first, the turnovers and assist ratio was really bad in the first half. 7 turnovers, 6 assists. As you alluded to, the guards didn't provide any assists in the first half. And it just felt like they weren't able to get to their offense in half court throughout the entire half. Whenever you saw Philip Aracha scoring, a lot of it isolated. Chris Murray, a lot of times, winning just one-on-one matchups, scoring, getting to the rim. There wasn't that ball movement that you're used to seeing from Iowa. And I thought that Peyton would have been able to help that in a way. I mean, you're talking about Aaron and Connor and their lines, having them both on the court at the same time, not providing anything offensively, really hurt Iowa in that first half. In a game where you felt like they, by the way that they were shooting and playing good defense, could have built a strong lead going into halftime and came away with the win today. So, obviously Peyton was frustrated with those touch fouls. I mean, we could go into a whole tangent about those in itself, but obviously that frustration got to him a bit and kind of boiled over for the whole game. I mean, he didn't play very much, 15 minutes. I think you said that. So those are my thoughts. I mean, I really felt like they could have used him in that first half. And, I mean, again, slow start offensively, not shooting well, away from home, 2 of 10 from 3 in that first half. Really hurt Iowa today.
Yeah, and that was they were 4 for 17 from 3 for the game. And it's just been the 100% theme of this season is they're not good. 3-point shooting team away from Carver Hawkeye. And see, I did the math. Let me find, I'm going to call it up here as I talk, but yeah, 4 for 17. I mean, you just can't, you know, you can't win when you're doing that. And, you know, this wasn't like, you know, Ohio State didn't play great. That's kind of what, you know, it's not like Ohio State came in here and shot the lights out, kind of like Nebraska did, you know, like Ohio State was really not, you know, not that impressive to me, but Iowa ends up going 4 for 17 for 3. Here's the number. They're now 88 for 295, which is 29.8% from three when not playing at home this year. So, again, you know, that does not bode well for being some on some neutral site next Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, and I think what you said about this not being a great game by Ohio State, I mean, it wasn't. I mean, 18 lead changes. It was back and forth. It was down to the wire. And I think the frustrating part for fans is not only was this not a great game played by Ohio State, this is not a good Ohio State team, top to bottom. When you just look at the talent that they've had on paper, what they were supposed to do, and then you look at what Iowa did in the last game, you felt that this was a game that Iowa should win. And the interesting part about it was when we were driving up last night, we were talking about Wisconsin, Ohio State, which would have been a more favorable matchup for Iowa. And we kind of came to the conclusion that Wisconsin may have been a better matchup, but this was going to be a dangerous game for Iowa either way. Two teams that both beat Iowa convincingly during the regular season. And you saw how Ohio State was starting to play really well down the stretch of the season. We're able to get a big win, obviously, over Wisconsin. And it just felt like this was a dangerous game for Iowa if they didn't come out and put their foot on the gas early. And they didn't do that. And obviously now you have to question how much of the Nebraska loss carried over into this game. And then on the other side of that point is how can these two losses not carry over to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, to me, it just didn't look like two things. It just didn't look like there was much confidence out there. And I think what you pointed out with Ulis and Connor, just, you know, neither one really seemed like they were confident they could score the ball. Not that they're big scorers anyway, but that just reduces your options because Phillip played well. He had 20 points, 7 rebounds. Like you said, Chris played pretty well except for the 3-point shooting. He had 17 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. But yeah, that's, you hit the nail on the head. Here's how crazy this season has been. Kennington, Hawkeyes with the loss today end up going 1-7 against the numbers 10 through 13 seeds in the Big Ten tournament. How is that possible?
That's ridiculous.
And they went 8-1. They went 8-1 against teams seeded 3 through 9. So I guess they just needed to face a higher seed.
Yeah, but that was the thing about the double bye. I believe that you might have pointed that out in a column or a podcast or some form where you said the big advantage in the double bye is that you avoid most likely that upset-minded team in the first few rounds. You're going to see most likely a higher seed in those, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday games. So I still feel like, and I've said this before to you off air, we're 32 games into the season and I still really don't quite know what this Iowa team is. It just feels like you kind of see something different in every game. And, you know, obviously the road shooting woes and playing well at home and those kind of overarching themes you're going to see fairly consistently, but just kind of like the nuances of each game, you kind of have like a sweeping declaration or a different conclusion after every game, just because they're all so very different. And another point that I wanted to bring up to you, I thought Josh Dix could have played more minutes today. I thought that for the few minutes he played in the first half, he was fairly solid. He had a nice cut to the basket, made a layup off of a Rabracha assist. And I just think if your backcourt is struggling, they're not getting much production in terms of initiating the offense, especially scoring the ball, somebody who, you know, is dependable with the ball and also has the ability to knock down jumpers would have helped them out a lot today. So if Payton wasn't in the game, I definitely felt like Josh Dix could have gotten some more run.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I feel like Josh plays pretty good defense. And I think Fran McCaffrey has kind of said that too. So
I agree.
It's not like you get a drop off defensively there, you know, from Ulis or Perkins. But I don't know, you know, as usual, and you understand, it always happens with head coaches after a disappointing loss, but you know, could Fran McCaffrey have done anything better? It seems like a little bit of the reaction is just sort of like, oh boy, Fran, you know, can't do it in the postseason. Of course, he wins the Big Ten tournament last year, but the point is valid. I mean, you lose to he has gotten knocked out of this tournament a lot in the past. Early on, last year is the exception. They've lost as a 5 seed. Three times in the first game now. They lost 15, 16, and today they lost as a 6 seed and 14 in the first game. So I get it. What could he have done differently maybe today? I guess we've touched on a few things, what should he have done differently?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say what he could have done. Ultimately, for me personally, this game came down a lot more to player execution than X's and O's. I think my two main criticisms would be having Peyton in there more in the first half. I thought Josh Dix could have played more minutes, but those two takes are functions of that the backcourt play. That's not Fran's fault. He's calling plays. He's trying to design things. When they weren't turning the ball over, the plays were working. Iowa was getting good shots. They shot 50%. They shot open threes. They just weren't hitting them. So I understand the frustration from the fan base, but I think this one was more of a player execution failure than him not doing the X's and O's or whatever was needed in this game to win. Because, I mean, even if you look at taking out Connor or Aaron, you have Peyton, you have Josh Dix, but behind them you have a lot of uncertainty. I mean, Desante Bowen, I think this definitely was a game where if you would have put him into the game for extended run, things might have been able to spiral out of – things might have spiraled because Ohio State, again, very good guard play. Rabracha was cooking. Chris Murray played really well. There was no need to insert Joshua Gundele or Riley Movie. They weren't in foul trouble themselves. So there really weren't a lot of answers from my vantage point for Fran other than his players just playing a little bit better to win a close game.
Yeah. They had open shots, and Philip Rabracha alluded to that after the game and the post game. He said, like, coaches gave us, you know, a good game plan. We just didn't execute it. There must have been some issues in execution today because Philip brought that up. Any other post-game reaction before we go? We kind of look ahead now to the NCAA tournament. Any other post-game reaction that stuck out to you today from the Hawks?
I would just say that I really felt for Tony Perkins, who played his heart out in the second half. But unfortunately for him, missed those two free throws at the end. I believe they were down two at that point. Down one, I have to pull up Zach. Thing, but that thing was down three. He hits a layup. They're down one. He goes next possession, gets fouled on a transition layup. He misses those two free throws. Then Ohio State hits a three-pointer right after that. It was a huge swing in the game, and you could kind of tell that was eating at him a bit on the podium. So I feel for him in that regard because I felt like he was Iowa's best player in the second half and really sparked a lot of energy on both sides of the court. And I think the next thing that I'll point to is players said the right things and Fran said the right things about looking ahead to the tournament and resetting and wanting to put their best foot forward. But it's kind of hard to visualize that happening as a fan, I'm sure, and even where I'm sitting in my seat. I don't know what to expect in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, who they get is going to play a lot into it, matchups and all of that. But I'm not quite sure where the team is going to go from here, and I'll be really interested to see how they regroup in the next week or so.
Yeah, there's I would say my prediction will be they're going to be a 9 seed, and there's zero difference between an 8 and 9, so you might as well be you might get a little better opponent, I guess, if it's an 8. But yeah, on the seed line, there's zero difference. There's zero advantage to being 8 versus 9. I kind of think that's where I was going to end up. And that means I've kind of like looked at some of the brackets, and of the 8 locations, you know, it looks like 2 of the number 1 seeds will be probably in Birmingham, Alabama, which would be Alabama and Houston. So that's 50% of the 1 seeds. And if you're an 8 or a 9, you're going to face a 1 seed in the second round. You're going to be in that bracket, in other words. So I think Birmingham's probably the most likely. And then you look at the other one seed, which would be Kansas. So I still think Des Moines could be a possibility for the Hawkeyes. Just so people know, there's no preclusion. There's no reason Iowa cannot be in Des Moines, especially if Kansas is the one. And then the other thing is Marquette could very well be the two in Des Moines. And if Iowa's a 10 seed, they could be there as well. So those are kind of my, honestly, I'd say probably two of the most likely destinations for Iowa. I've seen Iowa projected today by Lenardi as a 7 in Denver. So, you know, let's say they get knocked all the way down to 10. Or, I mean, I really think 7 through 10 is all possible. It's almost a mixed. I'm not trying to predict exactly where they're going to go, but they're going to be facing either a 7, 8, 9, or 10 seed in the first round. So basically, let's call it a toss-up. And then you're going to have to face one of the top teams in the country to get to the Sweet 16. So that's not – it's not like the path that we were talking about last year where it's like beat Richmond, beat Providence, you're in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, just kind of some thoughts. I mean, personally, I would love to see Iowa match up with Alabama just to see Chris Murray against Brandon Miller. I think that would be a must-see matchup. Obviously, Brandon Miller is going to be a topic in the draft. Chris Murray fighting for that position in the first round. I think that would be a really intriguing matchup. Obviously, Kansas, Des Moines, which I don't know if I'll call that Iowa home game, maybe 50-50 crowd of some sort, but local for Iowa. So I think that would be cool as well. We'll just have to see what happens. So those are just kind of my initial thoughts in terms of where they're seated. And you know, I just want to get your opinion on this as I'm thinking about it. You know, how big was that win against Michigan State? And I know that there's been questions about Iowa on the bubble, not on the bubble, but I mean, if they would have lost to Michigan State and the rest of this season would have played out the way that it did, and they're sitting there at 18-14 and 10-10 and this bad loss to Ohio State, would Iowa potentially be sweating on Selection Sunday?
Yeah, that's actually a really, really good question, Kennington. And I think you'd probably be – we'd probably just be making contingency plans to go to Dayton, you know, for the first four potentially as a, you know, 11 or 12 seed or whatever it is. So, yeah, that's a really good point. I think Rutgers is probably in that boat now. They won today against Michigan. So, at this point, I would say Rutgers is probably, you know, in the tournament. So, maybe it is 11. But, yeah. You're right. That without that comeback, I don't think we're talking about a team solidly in the field. I mean, I guess there's an outside chance Iowa could slip all the way to Dayton, but I don't really think that that is in anyone's projections at this point. And I should point out that the other number one seed projected at this point would be UCLA. So again, if you're thinking about where would the 8-9 teams go, you know, their closest spot is Sacramento. So there you go, Keegan Murray connection there. And then obviously Iowa couldn't be paired with a 2 seed or a 1 seed Purdue. So again, you're kind of trying to winnow down where you think Iowa might go. You know, even Texas, Kennington, is projected as a number 2 by Lenardi in Birmingham. So, you know, that could be another reason to think Birmingham. I mean, some projections have Houston and Columbus. I don't know. There's, you know, we'll see. There's no, I'm trying to give you guys options of like where Iowa, what regions Iowa's going to be in. And I guess the real question is, can, you know, this team is so mercurial, right? And maybe we can just leave it on this, Kennington. Honestly, I have no idea what to expect in the NCAA tournament. And this team could hit 15 3-pointers in the first round and 16 in the second round. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, we've seen this team have really high highs. On this most recent example would be the best win of the season against Indiana, and then they faltered at the end. We've seen this team on losing streaks bounce back and have big wins. So this is going to be a true test for the leadership of the team, the veterans of the team. I think that is another silver lining here is that within the power structure of the team, pretty much everybody who's playing is an upperclassman or Peyton Sanford who's played in a lot of games. So I think that should inspire a little bit of confidence that they'll be able to have a mature approach and kind of rally the troops. This has been a team that's responded well to adversity. So this would be, I mean, this is the optimal time. It literally is the biggest one game scenario that you can imagine, a one game season from here on out. So I say all that to say I don't know what to expect either. Like you said, they could hit 15 threes and win. They could hit 5 threes and lose by double digits, and I don't think I would be surprised either way. So I guess we'll just kind of table it there. I'm really interested to see what happens on Selection Sunday and looking forward to kind of breaking down the match of whoever Iowa does draw.
Exactly. We got a lot more time to figure that out. Obviously, the next chance, you know, Iowa could Iowa still hasn't achieved the 20-win season yet, so that's still on the table. There's a lot, you know, kind of little stuff at stake going forward. And, you know, last point I will make is I talked to Jess Settles, who was kind of walking on the way out. We just kind of talked for a little while. Of course, he was in on the last Iowa team that made the Sweet 16, 1999. You know, we're not making any predictions here, but that team also lost in the first round of the Big Ten tournament as a 5 seed and then went on to advance to the Sweet 16. So who knows? He did say, and again, we were just kind of just talking, so this isn't like there's no projections being made here, but he did say getting that extra rest can be really beneficial. So at this point, I don't think Iowa was going to move up a ton on the seed line. So if you're looking for any positive, Fran McCaffrey even mentioned Kennington that there's some injuries being nursed right now, right, on the team. We don't know what those are necessarily, but, you know, maybe Tony, we've seen him limping a little bit. You know, Chris maybe with a little bit of a back issue. So I don't know. Not sure. You know, nobody's ever said that, but it just seems like they could use a little time to rest now at this point. And, you know, that would be the one positive I would share. You got the last word.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think there was an obvious correlation between the grueling grind that they went through at the end of last season to the quick turnaround they had against Richmond, also flying across the country to do so on short rest. So having the maximum amount of time to flush everything, get healthy, and get back to practice, I think will really be beneficial. I mean, I'm even thinking – I mean, I know it's Thursday, but the loss on Sunday – against Nebraska was still lingering on Tuesday at availability. Philip Rocha said that Peyton Sanford said they were kind of looking ahead past Nebraska and it kind of bit them a bit. So they were still talking about that on Tuesday, carried over to today. So maybe an extended period of time will give them opportunity to flush these last two games and put their full focus on winning in the tournament.
Thanks, Kennington Smith. Last thought I'll put in everyone's head. Another one of those teams kind of in that 7 to 10 range is West Virginia. How about Joe T versus the Hawkeyes in the NCAA tournament?
That'd be fun.
It'll be fun. It'll be fun. So we'll find out on Sunday with the rest of you. And obviously a huge Selection Sunday for the Iowa women as well. Will they get a number one seed or not? For Kennington Smith, this is Chad Lystico from the United Center saying so long. And we're going to head home for the weekend and talk to you on Sunday. Take care.